Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, it's Angela. Welcome to the podcast. Today I have Jim, and I'm also excited to announce that we have a new member today, and it's Deborah Lacombe. Deborah is an attorney who has extensive experience in policy and legislative matters, and Deborah and I have been working together on several projects at the national level. So we're really excited to have Deborah on to add her perspective. Welcome, Deborah.
Thanks, Angela. I'm really glad to be here. This will be fun to do together. And I just wanted to say how much I've enjoyed listening to the podcast over the years and how valuable I think it is to give lawyers throughout the country practical tips on a regular basis, and particularly things that are actionable, whether you're part of a big law office or hanging out your own shingle. So thank you for including me.
Yes, well, we're excited and glad to have you join us today. And today we are going to continue talking about retention. And while some of what we talk about will be focused on office administration, there's also the individual lawyer aspect that we want to talk about, which is keeping yourself in the profession if you are one of those solo practitioners. If you listen to our last episode, you'll know we talked with Jonathan Budd of Kids Voice. And if you haven't had a chance, I would encourage you to go back and hear that one. Since that interview, we as a group all presented at the NACC conference, and it was a really interesting opportunity for us because we got to hear from law office leaders all over the country and how they have been handling issues related to retention. And there were a lot of really interesting ideas. And so what we wanted to do today was kind of talk through some of those things that came up for us and provide our perspective in hopes of giving you a list of new tools and ideas that would help you as you either run your law office or as you look to sustain yourself in the profession. So Jim, I think I'll kick it off to you to get started.
You know, you mentioned the previous podcast, the last one where you interviewed Jonathan Budd, and he raised that good point that even if you can't give an employer, give yourself more money, one of the main things we can do for people is control vacation policy and the amount of flexibility your office has to offer. So what's that look like in everyday life and how can you make it effective? We want to give a little list of some things that'll help you implement this in a meaningful way. The big thing is when folks take time away from this work, it needs to really be time away. It's important that you have folks getting away from the office, and when they're on vacation, don't let them check their email. Don't let them check their voicemail. Just make sure that you have coverage for them, that someone will handle their emergencies. And if you have a process in place for that, you're going to find that people will be able to turn their brains off and take a real break from the work. Second point I want to make here is that that goes for just day-to-day life too. When you're not either on vacation or at work, you're just going through your regular work week. The boundaries can get blurred so easily. It's really important to make sure that you're keeping some boundaries in your day-to-day work-life balance. So you've got to be conscious and mindful of how you and your body are responding to the day-to-day stress of this kind of work. You know, I will email a staff member sometimes on the weekend because that's when I think about something. I always title those emails for Monday because I don't want people seeing it and thinking they need to respond right away. Invariably, what happens is that paralegal responds to me on a Saturday night or something. And I'm like, damn it, I didn't want you working on the weekend on this. But it's the way we're all wired right now. And we've got to be very mindful about it. The other thing I want to mention here is that if you or your staff are finding that you're working extra hours later into the evening, because, you know, some of the older kids, they get home from school at 3, 4, 5 o'clock. Stuff starts to happen more and more these days later in the day. If you see staff putting in that kind of hours, you've got to be flexible and let them come in a little later. We have always found it really pays not to be a clock watcher in this line of work. And it's a hidden benefit that staff really appreciates. And when you can't give salary and you're looking to give vacation time and retain people and make the job something that they really want to stay at, being flexible in just day-to-day hours, forget about being a bean counter and saying, is that a vacation hour you're taking right now or a sick hour or authorized leave? You know, what is this minute of the day being quantified as. Just relax a little bit, look a little macro at the big picture and the quality of the work, and everyone's going to be happier and you're going to be able to retain good people that way.
That reminds me of another point that Jonathan Budd made just about trusting your people. When you have people who are really dedicated to this work, if they are at a school function or at a doctor's appointment from 1 to 3, if you can be flexible and they know that about you, that you believe in them, we heard at the NACC conference that that really added to a work culture that people wanted to come back to. And as you were talking, I was thinking about the fact that people who are law office managers are typically our age, been in the profession 25, 30 years. Maybe you have some younger folks that are taking the helm at these organizations, but the people that are working for you are younger. So they don't remember that there was a time where you weren't connected. They don't understand what the TGI Friday concept that we all used to have songs on the radio about and that kind of thing, where that sense of freedom you felt when Friday night was coming, that was a tangible emotion for people. And they knew they could really unplug and their boss wasn't going to be looking for them. And they had the whole weekend to themselves. And that's not how it is in general now with technology, but also because of the nature of this work. So having law office leaders or adopting the kind of policies for yourself to achieve that really will aid in being committed to the job long term and having staff retained at a higher rate.
Another thing that we talk about a lot in this work is the secondary trauma piece and the impact of the day-to-day work on people individually. But what doesn't get discussed as often is when on top of that, some of your employees or you experience some personal trauma or significant loss. And some of the ideas that came out at the conference we thought were really interesting around that. So we wanted to take a minute and talk about how you might address that when something happens in your employees' lives.
I think this is such a huge point. I mean, we've missed this in our staff, but definitely our work is different than an accountant or a finance person. You know, you hear so many people who suffer loss or trauma in their life, and they're like, my work saved me. My work is a safe place. Our work has secondary trauma built into it. And so the personal loss can trigger that secondary trauma in your work life and vice versa. So it's real important to be mindful of this and aware of it. You know, one great point is to have that mental health service component ready for when it's needed, for when you recognize it. Because if you're recognizing it in yourself or an employee, it's tough to go looking for it at that point. If you have it built and ready to pull out when you need it, it's a huge benefit. The other thing you really want to look for is whether you or your staff are losing that ability to compartmentalize this work and the stress that it can have, the impact it can have on your body. The stress hormone is cortisol, right? And it rises with stress and trauma and grief and those emotions and ravages your body a little bit. That's what cortisol does. Oxytocin is the love and nurturing hormone, and they're seesaw. One goes up, one goes down. That triggering of the cortisol happens when you have suffered trauma and pain and loss, and it can be in your work life, your personal life. It's going to impact your health and your well-being. So it's really important that if your staff's losing that ability to compartmentalize and they're disinfecting their whole life and their whole well-being, that you'd be ready to take some action and have some support for them. As management, you want to monitor this. You can see the stress in your folks just by the way they're talking about their cases or their moods. And if you have an employee assistance program in place, if you don't, you know, Google it, look into it. It's a great thing to have. And folks need support out there, because with this line of work, your work's just not a safe space to go and turn your brain off and work the way some professions can. You know, ER nurses can't go to the ER for work and escape trauma in their life. There's too much trauma at work. That's kind of the type of field we're in. And we've got to be mindful of that.
I think that's so interesting how you're talking about it structurally as someone who runs a law office and is looking at the people around and saying, you know, one, we're going to have some things in place by default, whether it's an employee assistance program or some other mental health service resource that you can easily refer people to, and looking for that sign that people can't compartmentalize anymore, I think is a great way to say it. At the conference, one of the participants mentioned a time where she was in court with all the people that she's usually in court with, and someone said to her, "Are you okay?" And it was the first time that she stopped and she paused and thought to herself how much she was carrying at that time. And there were some things in her personal life that, you know, were stressful. And the fact that someone who wasn't a particularly close friend, the story went, you know, was someone that she was in a more adversarial nature with, but who was genuinely saying to her, "Are you okay?" And just to have now this awareness. So what do? Now we go back to the office and hopefully you have some sort of resource or some sort of structure like Jim just explained to get people through that.
I'd love to add for the individual lawyers out there, you know, when you're managing your own practice, you have a caseload and you're trying to keep things moving, doing your own billing, all of that stuff. Noticing that in yourself and doing something about it can be exceedingly difficult. You may not have the support. I think you're all aware of all of the online services where you can actually get therapy without even going to an office. It's more accessible now than ever. And I would just say that the time spent in decompressing and potentially learning how to compartmentalize and taking care of yourself, while it may not seem possible, it will absolutely help you down the road. If you can, as Jim talked about, if you can bring down that cortisol level, everything will be easier. And so I would just say, just remember how easy it is now compared to what it used to be, and take advantage of those types of resources if you can.
Absolutely. And to Deborah's point, I think we talk about, you know, retaining people and making the work environment a good place in the macro. But when we're talking about managing the stress of the job and the mental health aspect of it, we've got to look at it sometimes in the micro. And it comes down to, like, is there a case that is destroying you right now or destroying one of your staff members right now? And if so, get that case off of them. Because there is that thing about the straw that breaks the camel's back, right? Get rid of that straw. Mm-hmm. If that's what it's going to be, get that straw off the pile. And so that's what you got to look for in the micro. Sometimes that's where the problem lies. And you can take quick action to alleviate a lot of pressure sometimes by taking one traumatic case off of a person.
That's such an important thing to think about. And even if you're a solo practitioner and you have a case that you think is really sinking you and you've lost perspective and you can go to the judge and ask to have the case transferred and do a good job transferring it and potentially keep yourself in the field longer. So it seems dramatic. And of course, we generally say keep the same lawyer on the same case. But what we're talking about today is keeping good lawyers in the profession. And sometimes it's better for all to be able to make those shifts. So I think we could actually talk about that topic for a whole lot longer, but we have some other ideas we wanted to share today. And one of them, it was one of my favorites. We always talk about exit interviews, and that's when you learn what went wrong and maybe some good things as well. But one of the ideas introduced was called the stay interview. So Jim, I'd love for you to tell our audience a little more about that.
Yeah, this is a practice we learned about from the Children's Law Center in Los Angeles. And basically, you sit down with your longer term employees who are staying, and you find out why they're staying and what it is you're doing right, what it is they love about the work. Now, obviously, invariably, they're going to cover what needs to get better to keep them there, which is a great tool, because you want to have this conversation before you're having an exit interview. That's the whole point of this conversation today. And in order for this to work, obviously, your staff needs to trust you. The whole idea is to talk freely as if it is an exit interview. And so that's the groundwork you set at the start of this interview. You say anything, including about me, your supervisor, as if you're out the door. And it's a safe space to just vent, and we find out so much about what we're doing right and what we need to do better. And it's just been invaluable the few times we've done it since learning about it at the conference. You get an inventory about what it is people love about being a children's lawyer, and you get an inventory about what might be driving people out of the profession. So there's a real power in having people reflect on these things, and there's a real power in having people reflect on why they love their job. Because when people reconnect with that, they reconnect basically with what brought them to this profession and what is going to keep them in it. So it's been a great tool, and I would encourage everyone to do it.
It actually reminds me of how you have talked about how you had people leave and then come back after a number of years somewhere else. People realize once they, you know, the grass is always greener, and then they come back. And I feel like the stay interview is an opportunity for lawyers to think about what they like about where they are. So it has like a dual purpose. One is giving you good information, but also allowing someone to reflect on what elements of what they do that does keep them there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's what people do. They leave, work for an insurance defense firm, and they have a little stay interview that they would have had with us. Once they get there, they're like basically interviewing themselves. Like, why did I leave children's law again? What do I like about insurance defense? And they invariably have come back several people over the years. So yeah, it's a great preventative measure to take to get people to stay, essentially.
Yeah. I love that one. And I do think, again, to relate back to if you're practicing on your own, just taking inventory for yourself on what you like about the work, what you could change, what you have the power to change, just to kind of keep all of those things top of mind as you move forward. One last area we want to talk about really relates to the identity of being a lawyer for children and what that looks like and how you as a supervisor or office leader can really help create in your lawyers a positive identity around the work.
This was something that really struck me in the discussions at the NACC conference, which was that the way you present the position, the way that you frame the work could actually impact retention. Having people think of themselves as another cog in the wheel or part of a system that's overwhelmed or underfunded isn't terribly empowering. And I think actually it was either John or Jim that was saying that the way that they characterize it is that they're hiring lawyers to be an agent of change, that you are a positive force that sort of stands not outside the system, but a person who could make a difference in a place that needs change. And I thought about it in the moment at the conference that does sound like a much better job to me. I would much rather be an agent of change than I would yet another person in a courtroom that has too few resources and not enough time and an overall sort of low energy. So being an agent of change, I thought, was a really great way to frame it. Another participant talked about really highlighting the constitutional nature of the work, not getting children's law relegated to something less prestigious within the four walls of your own office. Maybe that's happening outside. Maybe child welfare in your state or your county is kind of getting a bad rap, but you don't have to do that as a supervisor. And as an individual, you can choose to see yourself as a person who is taking charge in a way that is going to create positive results.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the way that each individual thinks about the work is critical. We are part of the system and that we operate in it every day, but seeing ourselves as outside of it from the standpoint of advocating for the child and seeing ourselves as a check on the system, just all of those concepts of how you see the work and how you see your role in the system are really important so you don't get dragged down by the day-to-day and get caught up in some of the negative messaging around the child welfare system as a whole.
Yeah, I think, and when people are working with a sense of a mission that they believe in, there's a real sense almost like you're working for yourself. And that's a big reason to stay, when you get the sense that you're working for something you personally believe in.
Absolutely.
I think too, from a law office perspective, some of the strategies that have practical application would be to look at some of the data. Maybe the children that you're representing are moving through the system a little bit faster in your jurisdiction. But one of the ways to operationalize this thing that we're talking about beyond having a very compelling position description or having your advertisements use language about positive change and proactively working with children, getting your staff together and showing them the data, showing them how the things that they're doing day to day are furthering a mission that everybody came together to work towards as a retention strategy, touching base with your people to show them how tangible a difference they're making was another great takeaway from the conference.
Deborah, that's a great point. And I think individual lawyers can do similar things, which is keeping track of the outcomes that you achieve on behalf of your clients as an ongoing reminder of the changes that you're making. Before we wrap up today, I just wanted to roll quickly through the main points in today's episode so that you can think about what you might apply going forward. And I think there's really just a few key things. The first concept we talked about is really taking a break, and whether you're individual or you're running a law office, the importance of a break being a true separation, a time where you are not thinking about the work at all. Another area that we talked about is dealing with any sort of personal trauma in your life or in the life of your employees in a meaningful way due to the nature of our day-to-day work. We also talked about stay interviews and doing that with your employees as a way to gather information and retain people. And finally, the last point we talked about is how you frame the work. So we hope that some of these ideas will be helpful for you as you're running your law office or as you're thinking about how to stay in the profession for an extended period of time. Thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.